And welcome to episode 12 of the Field Pass Podcast. As always, I'm Asher Miller, and today we have another great guest. He is NFL.com's lead draft writer, Eric Edholm. How are you?
I'm doing well, Asher. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, man. How'd you enjoy round one of the draft?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I love Quinyon Mitchell for Philadelphia, and we're going to talk more about that and some potential things that could happen in round two. That being said, sit back, relax, welcome down the field. First off, what do you think of round one?
Yeah, I mean, I think early on, you know, the first handful of picks were kind of chalk. I mean, kind of went as expected. You had a, you know, nothing shocking one through three. I think that would have been the most plausible result with the three quarterbacks going in a row. Arizona had been linked to Marvin Harrison Jr. for quite some time. You know, unless they moved out, that was probably their guy. I mean, you know, tiny surprise with Joe Alt to the Chargers, but not stunning to me that they would favor an offensive lineman. I think, you know, obviously you get to the Penix pick,
right,
to Atlanta, and that's really where, you know, the draft kind of took a left turn, no pun intended. I mean, you know, there had been a tiny bit of buzz about the Falcons as a quarterback team, and specifically a Penix team, but you know, frankly, I didn't really buy into it after all they spent on Kirk Cousins and everything that, you know, they did this offseason. It felt like a team that was, you know, in win or now type mode. So that surprised me a little bit. The run on offensive players, we knew it was coming. We just didn't know it would go 14 deep, right? So it pushed some really talented defensive players, A, to the bottom of round one, and I think also some first-round talents into the top of round two. So that was another semi-expected development with the offensive run, but way bigger than I thought, at least consecutive picks-wise. So pretty active first round, not as many big trades as we might normally see, especially with six quarterbacks going in the top 12. Thought there might be a little more action, but I think the teams that were in those catbird seat picks just decided, like, we like a player we can draft, so right, you're going to have to come in with a way above premium price, and that ended up being a big theme of the night.
Yes. Do you think any teams made out more than others?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously the Chicago Bears, we knew they were getting, yeah, Caleb Williams, or we, you know, 99% suspected that was going to be the case, and no surprise there. And I wasn't sure if they would trade out of that pick at nine. I didn't know if, you know, if it was contingent on a certain player being there or not being there, but with so few picks total in the draft, they ended the weekend with only four, and now they've made half of them. I thought there was a high likelihood they might try to move back. Instead, they said, nope, we're taking Rome Odunze. We're giving our new quarterback another weapon, you know, with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet and DeAndre Swift, and a better offensive line than they've had in recent years. You know, it's a pretty good environment for a rookie quarterback. I would say they and the Vikings made the biggest splashes. Now, we'll see if they work out. Obviously, the Vikings made a couple of trades, maneuvering the board, moving up for J.J. McCarthy, moving up for Dallas Turner. Mm-hmm. Division rivals, you know, the Lions also moved up, so yeah, highly active NFC North. It's going to be a good division next year. You know, I'm here in Detroit. The local fans were very excited about the Terrion Arnold situation, which, you know, going back to what we said earlier, I didn't think they'd be able to get within range of one of the top two corners. That was my feeling at the end of the weekend, and it obviously worked out to their benefit. So, yeah, there were a lot of teams that did really well for themselves, and I praise the Giants, too, for, you know, they had their eyes on Drake May. They couldn't get him. Had a plan B. It's a strong one. Malik Nabers gives Daniel Jones a chance to thrive. Mm-hmm. I like that kind of thinking. You're willing to kind of pivot off the pie in the sky option to take a very sensible and smart, and I think very productive pick in Malik Nabers. So, you know, I give Joe Shane a lot of credit for what he did.
I'm very shocked that offensive picks went so deep this year, and saying, yeah, Quinyon Mitchell fell all the way to Philadelphia is just very surprising to me. I had him go way earlier than he did. And I think, yep, Chicago is going to be a great team this year now, especially with Keenan Allen, Caleb Williams, and Odunze. I think they're going to be very, very good. But
Yeah.
do you think
Yeah.
there's going to be any players that are going to make that immediate impact?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mitchell, I think, will be expected to jump right in there. You know, people may hear Toledo and not exactly a, you know, a football hotbed as far as the NFL draft is concerned. I think their last first rounder was Dan Williams in 1993. And I'm actually old enough to remember that pick too. So that you can get an idea of how old I am. But, you know, I first of all, I just give credit to Howie Roseman, who's been ultra aggressive in the past. And when he sees somebody he wants, he goes and gets them. And I think he read the board correctly. I think he kind of saw the tea leaves settling into place and that he might not have to move up. So, you know, we love to give GMs their flowers when they do these bold moves and, you know, come swooping out of nowhere and give up picks and rattle the cages and all that stuff. And those are fun moments when you're a draft viewer, right? But we should also give praise for those who exercise some patience and are willing to kind of let a draft come to them when it all lines up that way. But yeah, I mean, I would imagine, you know, he'll get a chance to earn a starting job. A lot of these guys will too. Obviously, the quarterbacks, you figure, you know, it's funny to think that Drake may be the last guy to start other than Michael Penix. But, you know, of the other five quarterbacks, you know, you could argue that New England may take their time a little bit with May, knowing that he doesn't have quite the experience some of the other quarterbacks they have. Jacoby Brissett, they may not have all the offensive pieces. So, you know, other than that, you would assume Caleb Williams is going to come in day one, expected to be the starter. Jaden Daniels, you figure the same thing. You know, it Bo Nix in Denver will get every opportunity, whether it's week, you know, training camp, preseason, week one, week six, whatever it may be. When he's close to being ready, he'll be ready. So, I think the other, you know, interesting pick that I wasn't necessarily ready for, but I was kind of prepared for defense with Seattle. You know, we'd heard all, you know, a lot of people sort of, and I was on that train for a while too, pushing offensive linemen. But Byron Murphy Jr., I think, is one of the 10 best players in this draft class. I really think that, you know, I don't want to compare him to Aaron Donald. I don't think he's that, but you know, if he's Grady Jarrett or that type of interior disruptor, he's going to get on the field pretty early on in Mike McDonald's defense. So, you know, all will be expected to start right away. Certainly, a lot of the offensive linemen, other than maybe Amarius Mims, are going to be expected to probably start week one for their respective teams, at least the first round pick. So, yeah, I mean, this is a first round that's heavy on early contributors, even for guys like Brock Bowers, you know, who's a surprise pick in Las Vegas. I think he'll be used quite a bit.
I mean, you basically just mentioned what I was about to ask you. And other than the Michael Penix pick that you kind of talked a little bit about, was there any surprise move that really shocked you?
Yeah, I don't think the Bowers move shocked me. I mean, I could, you know, like if you said, you know, could the Raiders be a Brock Bowers team? I would say yes. However, I would say it with the caveat of them not being able to get the quarterback they want, right? And obviously, when Jaden Daniels went second, that was the guy they were looking to trade up for. It wasn't really realistic. It wasn't in the cards. Washington wasn't moving off that spot. And then Penix went eighth. Their hands were tied. That's when they said, okay, now we just go to the board and we look at who's the best player. So you tell me, take, you know, you take Brock Bowers 13th in the draft. I'm saying, hey, look, to me, he was one of the 10 best prospects. I have no problem with that pick, even with Michael Mayer there. He can run 12 personnel and be fine. So I think I'm just kind of looking down the list. I was a little surprised how Buffalo handled business when it came to their time on the clock. Was Xavier Worthy there? Clearly, they didn't view Worthy the same way the Chiefs did, but with the opportunity to take a receiver and some pretty good ones available, you know, were they worried about the health of Ladd McConkey? Did they not feel A.D. Mitchell was worth a first round pick? Was Worthy too much of a one trick pony? You know, these are questions that I have. Did they need extra picks? I think you could argue that they wanted to get that extra day two pick, and their small maneuvering helped them improve their day two and day three standing. However, does that give off, especially in light of the Stephon Diggs trade and letting Gabe Davis walk in free agency and Trey White and all these other guys they had to let go? Sure, a lot of it's financial, but do they consider themselves contenders? I mean, I know that's a little bit of a bit of a steep jump there, but still, I when you have Josh Allen, you're a contender. And the NFC or the AFCs rather, you could argue is still in flux a bit, but Aaron Rodgers coming back, Patriots have a quarterback. Dolphins aren't going anywhere. You know, they may not be a Super Bowl contender, but they can win that division. And just kind of makes you wonder how Buffalo views itself in light of how they handled the picks last night.
I mean, if AFC right now, I think the Chiefs got a lot better right now, giving Patrick a weapon now. I think that is going to be very scary. And I want to move out of round one a little bit. Can you describe what the scene is like in Detroit right now?
Yeah. Well, first of all, last night, just getting into where they put us up, where the media workroom is, and a lot of the people who are working at the draft. I mean, I think it was about an eighth of a mile from my hotel, and it took me around 45, 50 minutes to get it. There were people everywhere. There were fences lined up. A massive number of Lions fans, of course, coming off their best season in decades. I mean, it was an incredible year. It was a celebration of the Lions. There were fans of other teams wandering around. You saw all kinds of random jerseys, you know, jerseys that, you know, with names on them that you haven't seen in a decade or two. There's some funny ones, but great crowd. Yeah, on my way out, as I was done working around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, I was talking to some of the volunteers, and they said, people were having fun. They were behaving. They weren't, you know, there weren't any protests or there weren't any mass brawls or anything like that. So I think, you know, some decent weather, sun was out, people were happy. It was football in April. It was a great celebration. Today, you know, Friday night has been a little bit more laid back. I would say that the crowd was about one third of the size it was. Still took me a while to get in, but people are still having fun. You know, they're drinking beers in downtown Detroit, walking in the streets. Everybody seemed to be getting along pretty well. And this is why the draft has become a social gathering, an event, a traveling circus. It's, you know, Green Bay is going to be great next year. Yeah. Other cities are going to see these, you know, these events and say, we want in on that. So it's been cool, if not a little hectic early on.
I mean, my mom's from Detroit. And I've been downtown and to Florida so many times, and it could be one of the coolest stadiums, in my opinion, I've ever seen. It's beautiful down there.
The whole area is really nice. I mean, they've really rebuilt that whole area down there, and it looks great.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, when did you start to make your draft boards?
Yeah, so I'm kind of a, you know, I do a lot of power rankings and stuff, and I do some of the game coverage during the season. And then, you know, as I'm going through the college football season, I'm taking notes, I'm making calls, but I'm not full throttle into draft mode at that point. Other people are. Yeah. I give them credit that, you know, my job is a little different. I kind of divvy up my year in half. It's like half draft, half other stuff, right? And I would say I start getting really serious about it sometime in December. That's when I really start kind of organizing things. We don't really know who's coming out yet, but we know the seniors, we know the players who, you know, have gotten the most buzz, at least in terms of, you know, first, second round potential. You try to talk to as many people as you can throughout the process, pay attention to what's going on in college football. You know, obviously getting a look at all the teams during the season helps immensely. I mean, it really, you know, I've written about every single team in the NFL dozens of times this past season, and I've watched, you know, at least half their games, I would say. So get a feel for what they have, what they don't have, what they're missing, you know, what might leave in free agency, whatever, who the coach is, what kind of style of play they are. And then you go into work on the prospects and start putting the board together. I would say the first time I really have like a board kind of put together is about a week before the Senior Bowl. So, you know, mid to late January, that's when I first start kind of lining things up. And by that point, we're starting to get the bulk of the underclassmen have declared, and you can kind of go full throttle on this. And so January to April is the board construction phase, I would say.
Oh, wow. All right. And now I'm going to move back into the draft, but we're going to go out of round one
Yeah.
and talk about round two. Do you see any major changes in round two? Like, is anybody going to trade, do you think? Trade up, trade back, anything like that?
Yeah, no, I think we'll have some activity at the top. I mean, the Bills are, after moving back twice, two short jumps down, they're at the top. They're at number 33 right now. Again, we mentioned receivers earlier. If there's somebody they like, they'll take them. But more likely, it's because they couldn't get enough in return to move down a little bit. I think they'll try to do that. New England's obviously going to look for a receiver. So if you have receiver go back to back to start round two, just theoretically, then you start seeing teams get a little anxious and want to move up. So Cooper DeJean is another player who's been who was sort of mentioned as a possible first round pick. Had the injury, wasn't able to work out until late in the process. That may have hurt him a little bit. He's also not a pure corner. I think he's more of a nickel safety type, and can play outside a little bit, but really good football player. I know there are a lot of teams that would love to use him the way the Lions used Brian Branch last year, and kind of have him be that jack of all trades, if you will, and play a couple different spots and also special teams too. He's a good returner, so he's going to be a popular name. I don't know if he gets by Washington at 36. And in between the Bills, Patriots, and Commanders are the Cardinals, a team that's obviously shown a willingness to move around. At least last year, they were big movers in the draft. A little quieter on night one. They stayed at 4 and 27, took Marvin Harrison Jr., took Darius Robinson. I wouldn't be shocked if they're active. They're a team that I think kind of lying in the weeds a little bit, but I would imagine they're moving around. After six quarterbacks last night, I don't know when the first one is coming. It may not be till round three. Keep an eye on the Rams. They're a team that did some work on quarterbacks. I would say Spencer Rattler is somebody that can make sense for them. The teams that did not get quarterbacks in round one, who were at least doing a lot of legwork on that front, Giants certainly would be one of them. You could see them certainly be in that mindset. Now, will it be round three or will it be round four? There's a difference. I mean, there really is. Teams feel confident. If they make a mistake on a fourth rounder, you can cut them year one, and it's tough to swallow, but you can do it. Round three is a different story. So, we'll see how teams play that, but I think it's gonna be a good night Friday. Tonight's gonna be a pretty fun one, but a lot of work ahead.
I am excited. And my final point for you is kind of a two-parter, and it's about
Sure.
Philadelphia because I'm an Eagles fan, so I just have to ask.
Okay.
Do you
Fair
think
enough.
Howie is going to make a major move?
Yeah, I mean, I like as I kind of alluded to earlier, he had to be chewing his fingernails down to the down to the nubs on Thursday night, and I think he's a guy who loves to control the situation and seize control of it, right? If you have an opportunity, whether it's a signing Saquon Barkley early in free agency and just jumping out there and making your move, or trading up one spot for Jordan Davis, or all the other aggressive stuff they've done along the way. And if there's a Georgia player to be drafted, they'll take him, right? So there's also that. But yeah, no, I think you can easily sort of put him in the category of anxiously awaiting how the draft unfolds. In the same way with round one, where he was patient. You may see a different scenario unfold in round two where, okay, there's been a run at this spot. We got our corner last night. Now we need an offensive lineman. Now we need a receiver. Now we need this. And so, yeah, I think they're gonna be a little bit more in reactive mode.
Okay, that's actually really interesting to hear. And for the second part of this, I've seen a lot
Yeah.
about Cooper DeJean. He was supposed to go in the first round. Do you think Philly will take, if he starts to drop a little bit in the second round, do you think Howie would trade up for him? Or do you think Howie would sit still and draft a linebacker or a lineman, an offensive line?
Yeah, depends how far they're. I think their first, they're sitting at what 50 and 55 or something like 53, whatever it is. I don't remember the picks exactly, but So, you know, it depends how much you're willing to give up. I mean, if you have conviction on a player, and the thing is, you know, after you've taken a DB in the first round, coming back with a second one, they put, you know, they better play a different position, right? I mean, they have to, you don't want it to be a total overlap. And I think that would work in this case because, again, I see DeJean as a safety, box safety, a nickel corner. Can you play him outside? Yeah. I don't think that's where he's best, but I think you could do it. So, you know, there's enough of a difference in what he does and what Mitchell does to I think make it worth it. So, you know, they would have to be a candidate given the what they have in terms of picks. Now, there are obviously teams who, you know, depending on how far down we're talking, and especially with Washington, I mean, like I said, they've been connected to Cooper DeJean, and,
right.
You know, Howie also is smart. You know, he wants to grab the players he likes before division rivals do. So jumping ahead of 36 would be, I think, a wise choice. And maybe New England's in the market because they, you know, I think they need talent. And yes, you'd love to get a receiver for Drake May, but maybe you're thinking 50 and 53 for, you know, 34 and something else would be a wiser investment. Because you may get two players in those second round picks that are, and maybe they don't have to give up both. Maybe they only have to give up a lower pick too. So, you know, that's kind of how I would look at it if I was New England, and how I would certainly attack it if I was Philly.
All right. Well, let's hope the Eagles come out of this draft with another young stud. I hope Quinyon Mitchell is going to turn out pretty great. And that being said, Eric, thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Happy to come on anytime, and enjoy the rest of the draft. It's going to be a fun few days here.
Thank you. And that will do it for episode 12 of Field Pass. I'll see you guys next week.